This is the Daily Perspective Podcast for Tuesday, April 27th, 2021. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this, what is usually a daily dose of observation, insight, and absurdity. I know it wasn't yesterday. Gotta be honest with you, I was a bit under the weather yesterday. And I just, you know, said no. I don't know if it was something in the pollen, something in the coffee. I don't know. But basically felt a lot like death warmed over pretty much all day yesterday. And today I'm feeling a whole lot better. So what do you know? I don't think it was the Rona. No, I don't think it was. Anyway, I was feeling pretty rough yesterday. And my wife had the day off, and wasn't the motivation for taking the day off the podcast. But she kept asking me, are you okay? Do you need to go to the doctor? Do you? And that's so it was obvious that just from looking at me that I just really didn't feel good yesterday. And so I took the day, just kind of in the intent. This is life. The intent was to take it easy, right? Just to take it easy and chill and just see if it would run its course or whatever, you know. And what happened was I ended up not doing that. I ended up getting out and getting busy and running around and such. And, you know, isn't that always how it works? People who work for a living. Dads understand this. Wow, dads really understand this. You realize I need to rest. I need some quiet. I need to whatever. You know, I just need to unplug. I need to disconnect. I need some me time and just not. And you know what I'm talking about, right? It just happens every now and then. And when you make that decision, everything in the world, it's like everything says, he can't do that. And that's kind of what yesterday was about. And I mean, I was helping people. I was doing things and I'm glad to be able to, you know, but oh my goodness. It's just when you think, I just feel like warmed over garbage. I just need a day. And it's just like, hey, can you come over and, you know, text messages, ding, all this other stuff, emails, stuff. It's just, wow. Anyway, that was yesterday. And today, doing a lot better. And excited about the progress over at liferadio.fm and the Mark and Mac show and the like. And I there are things that are going on that are a bit on the surprising side to me. I mean, already we have some people that are talking to us about some things that we didn't foresee. We hope for, but we didn't foresee happening so soon. So we'll see how things pan out. And hopefully I'll be able to tell you more about that in the near future. It is a Tuesday edition of the podcast. There are things that I was going to talk about yesterday that I will talk about today just because I didn't have the opportunity to yesterday, and some things that came up in between. And I'm looking at my list. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I've got 9 items in my list of things to talk about today. I won't get to all of them. I will be skipping over some. But if you go look at show notes over on linkreport.us, you'll see all 9 stories I wanted to refer to today are listed there. I just went ahead and said, here, go ahead and take it all. Because you need to see what's in these stories, whether I get to them or not. And as such, you should make linkreport.us part of your daily what's up search. Just add it to your links of places to go every day, because the stuff that I find to talk about, I'll throw over there. And sometimes if I don't get around to talking about it on a specific day, on the day I intended to, I'm still going to talk about it. It may be the next day, but I'm still going to talk about it. So keep that in mind, okay? Just keep that in mind. One of the things I wanted to talk with you about right off the top is it's an absurd story, and I like leading with absurdity if I can. And there is a reason beyond the absurdity. So let me dive into it. Members of a family in Florida are facing charges after reportedly selling at least 28,000 bottles of bleach marketed as a cure for COVID-19. The family, according to reports, netted more than $1 million over the last year. According to an NBC News report, Mark Greenon and his sons Jonathan Jordan and Joseph Greenon were accused of fraud and violating civil court orders, instructing them to stop selling The Cure, which they promoted as Miracle Mineral Solution, or MMS. Documents filed in federal court Friday in Florida's Southern District said that during a 2020 podcast, Mark referred to the Second Amendment and threatened a federal judge over a court order halting the sale of MMS, saying she was committing treason. He is alleged to have said, "Do they want a Waco?" Of course, he was referring to the 1993 Texas siege that saw at least 76 people killed. Now, just a word to the wise, or maybe even a word to the foolish. Are you insane? Podcasts are on the internet. The internet's forever. All somebody's got to do is just capture it. And if they want to do you damage, they'll pull it up later and do you damage. And I realize that some people are like, bring it on. Bring it on. I'm the 3%. Bring it on. Like, there are people that are like this. And I realize, you do you. But if you don't think something's going to come down on you for threatening people on a podcast, then you really need deep, deep psychological counseling. You just do. NBC News reported that according to court documents, the family manufactured this solution in a backyard shed in Bradenton, Florida, about 45 miles south of Tampa, through what the documents described as an avowedly non-religious church called Genesis 2 Church of Health and Healing. The solution was marketed and sold as a cure-all for cancer, autism, diabetes, and other disorders and diseases. Mark Greenon is reportedly described as an archbishop and founder of the church. Prosecutors argue that Mark founded the institution, which he has repeatedly stated has nothing to do with religion, in order to legalize the use of the solution and avoid prosecution. The family's monthly income at the time reportedly jumped from $32,000 per month to $123,000 per month. Following a raid on the family's Bradenton property, authorities seized dozens of chemical drums, including 10,000 pounds of sodium nitrate and thousands more bottles of the solution. Loaded guns were also discovered at the property, including a pump-action shotgun hidden in a custom-made violin case. NBC reports that authorities arrested Jonathan and Jordan, and both are expected to be arraigned this week. Mark and Joseph are reportedly in Columbia at the time of the report. The Greenons were each charged with conspiracy to commit fraud and criminal contempt. If convicted, they could each face life in prison. On Sunday, the New York Times reported that Mark and Joseph Greenon reportedly operate a health restoration center in Colombia, where they allegedly charge people $5,000 per month to stay at a compound and dose themselves with the Miracle Mineral Solution. The Times also reported that a Florida grand jury indicted Mark and Sons and accused them of marketing and profiting from an unproven and potentially harmful solution for the various diseases. The U.S. Attorney's Office and the Southern District of Florida said the solution contains sodium chloride and water. The Times reports that when this is ingested orally, it becomes chlorine dioxide. That is a strong bleach used in industrial water treatments and in bleaching textiles, pulp, or paper. The family is said to have relied on a book, radio station, a newsletter, and cited Bible verses to market the solution to vulnerable customers. It isn't known at this time whether any people who purchased the product were sickened or died as a result of ingesting it. Now, why is this story important? Well, for one, a sucker's born every minute. People are willing to believe a number of things which someone of average intelligence would raise an eyebrow and say, "Seriously? No, seriously?" And that happens. P.T. Barnum famously said it, "There's a sucker born every minute." People will buy into all manner of things. They just will. Welcome to humanity. The other thing is the headline. Florida family reportedly makes $1 million selling bottles of COVID-19 cure that was nothing more than bleach. Well, we see towards the end of the article that actually it was sodium chloride and water. It was not bleach. Even in the images teasing this story that you would find it spread around social media, images of Clorox bottles, bleach. Well, it wasn't bleach. when it's ingested into your digestive system, it combines with your digestive juices and it becomes a really strong bleach solution. So why call it bleach? There is no other reason to call this formula bleach than to tie it to what Donald Trump said about injecting bleach or drinking bleach that the liberals, the leftists, the progressives, the liars on the left keep repeating. And there's no other reason for the title. None. Because they know that will get attention. They know it will get eyeballs. They know the curiosity factor will go up. Ooh, somebody actually did market bleach because Trump. And that's the whole thing. Well, because Trump, that's why. That's why they would market this as a bleach story. That chemical in the proper combination. Yeah, it is a bleach in the right combination, but not as it was marketed. Now, we still don't know if anybody was hurt. We don't know if it was what the danger level of drinking this was. We don't know the actual formula. But what we do know is that we were told that a family defrauded people who willingly purchased something that was not FDA approved, that hadn't been through any really trustworthy testing as a cure for COVID-19. And we were told it was bleach. Here's another thing. This is a symbol. This is symbolic of the fear of COVID produced by politicians and the press. If it were not for that fear factor, people would not have bought this miracle formula of theirs. The miracle mineral solution. People would not have even thought to buy it had it not been for the scare created by politicians and the press about COVID-19. So, if you want to start drawing lines and connecting things, the reason these frauds are in business in the first place, doing what they're doing, is because the politicians and the press frightened people enough that some people were desperate to find a cure for something that kills less than 2% of the people infected by it. And that is something to, that's something to scratch your head about and wonder. How can this happen in this country? It happens in the United States of America because we have been so dumbed down that we just accept whatever we're told in many cases. We just believe whatever the press tells us. We trust it to be true. As I've said many times here, there are a lot of us who part of our daily routine at a certain point in the day is we turn on the local or national news and we watch local and national newscasts. That's how we get our information. Others, younger than that particular part of our population, gets their information from the internet. And those who get their information from the internet are also getting a lot of information coming from the same mindset, the same sources as those behind the national and local news in the evenings. Progressives, who are just going to continue to repeat the party line, the narrative, and reinforce the deception. Because they don't believe it's deception. And they believe they're doing everyone a service by telling them this information, which turns out not to be true in many cases. And that's why it's extremely important to do your homework. You can use linkreport.us as your jumping off point if you'd like. Go over there and grab the stories, take a look, follow the links, and learn for yourself what's really going on. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast for a Tuesday, April 27th, 2021. Wow, May is almost here. Where's all this time going? I must know. A new study has been published by researchers at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. It says you're no safer from COVID-19 indoors at 6 feet or 60 feet. Uh-oh. That challenges social distancing policies. Somebody call the CDC and tell them they got it wrong. The study, led by Martin Z. Bezant, a chemical engineering and applied mathematics teacher, and John W. M. Bush, a professor of applied mathematics, argues that there really isn't much of a benefit to the six-foot rule, especially when people are wearing masks. He says it really has no physical basis, because the air a person is breathing while wearing a mask tends to rise and comes down elsewhere in the room, so you're more exposed to the average background than you are to a person at a distance. The study points out that, contrary to arguments by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, and the World Health Organization, the WHO, the amount of time you spend with an infected person indoors puts you at risk due to the air currents moving around in the background. Researchers say opening windows and installing fans is just as good as spending large amounts of money on expensive air filters. Researchers also said indoor occupancy gaps or caps were also flawed, saying 20 people gathered together for 1 minute inside, that'll be fine. Bezant told CNBC, what our analysis continues to show is that many spaces that have been shut down, in fact, don't need to be. Oftentimes, this space is large enough, the ventilation is good enough, the amount of time people spend together is such that those spaces can be safely operated even at full capacity. And the scientific support for reduced capacity in those spaces is really not very good. Think if you run the numbers, even right now, for many types of spaces, you'd find that there is not a need for occupancy restrictions. This emphasis on distancing has really been misplaced from the very beginning. The CDC or WHO have never really provided justification for it. They've just said, this is what you must do, and the only justification I'm aware of is based on studies of coughs and sneezes, where they look at the largest particles that might sediment onto the floor, and even then it's very approximate. You can certainly have longer or shorter range, larger droplets. If you look at the airflow outside, the infected air would be swept away and very unlikely to cause transmission. There are very few recorded instances of outdoor transmission. Crowded spaces outdoors could be an issue, but if people are keeping a reasonable distance, like 3 feet outside, I feel pretty comfortable that even without masks, he says, frankly. We need scientific information conveyed to the public in a way that is not just fear-mongering, but is actually based on analysis, so says Bezant. Now, this story, this MIT study, is extremely important because it reveals that we have been misled from the beginning, that there has been a lot of knee-jerk response, or reaction, I should say, because it's not response. Response is studied. Reaction is knee-jerk, it's instinctual. There's been a lot of knee-jerk reaction to fear-mongering. And in some cases, it's intentional. There is a reason behind it. They want it to happen. And I believe, as do many others, I'm not alone in this, that the reason we have this this issue, everybody who knows me knows when not to call. The reason that we keep having this information shoved at us about distancing, about masks, about a third wave, a different variant, all of this is to keep people scared. And it's working. Because frightened people give government more power over their lives. They want the hero to come rescue them, and government loves to play the hero. And you need to understand that. You need to understand that government loves playing the hero. And we'll do it at any given opportunity, because them being the hero justifies them spending more of your money, putting together big packages of spending, and only tiny percentages of those packages actually go to what you're frightened about. It's just excuses for them to do more things, to brag more about what they've done for people. And so fear-mongering results in them having more power and control. And that's all good for them, and it's all bad for you. Just remember that. Giving them more power and control is never good. It's never. And power and control is something that the Democrats have been pushing hard for a while. As I've told you before, I am on a handful of email lists. One of those about redistricting, about redrawing district maps for representation in states across America. And the reason that this push has been so intense over the last couple of years is that this year is the time it happens. It happens every 10 years when those districts can be redrawn. And it's happening this year. And the Democrats have been on a hard push to convince people that the Republicans are cheating and disenfranchising people. That's one of their favorite words, disenfranchising people, by drawing districts through gerrymandering. Gerrymandering is creating political districts, voting districts, based on who gives you the most power and most likely to vote for you living in those areas. So when you look at the boundaries, the boundary lines for districts, you'll see that they'll go up a block, they'll hang a left at this block, go up for three blocks, hang a right, go over four blocks, go back. And because they know the population centers and they understand these areas are made up primarily of conservative voters and these areas are made up of liberal voters, and they understand who is going to vote for who, and they want to be the ones in control of drawing those maps. Both sides do, both Democrats and Republicans. But the Democrats have all been crying wolf, screaming, yelling, pitching a fit about how evil Republicans are redrawing the maps to disenfranchise voters, especially on lines of race. Of course, you know this is all a lie, because when it comes to winning an argument and you can't, the left they're experts at distraction tactics. So they scream race whenever they're backed into a corner and they can't win. And that's what they've been doing about redistricting. Well, the census information is finally out. Texas, Florida, and North Carolina are among the states that are going to gain congressional seats based on new population data from the U.S. Census. That's a shift that could boost Republican chances of recapturing the House of Representatives from Democrats in the midterm elections next year. This is why they are so focused on the lie, telling people that this gerrymandering is going on and the evil Republicans are using it to disenfranchise votes on a racial basis. It's a bald-faced lie. It is actually, however, exactly what the Democrats want to do. And the lie is this, that both parties do it. But it's only evil when the other party does it. You see what I mean? The overall U.S. population stood at 331,449,281, according to the Census Bureau yesterday, a 7.4% increase over 2010, representing the second slowest growth of any decade in history. The release of the data, which was delayed for months due to the coronavirus pandemic, sets the stage for a battle over redistricting that could reshape political power in Washington during the next decade. States use those numbers and other census data to redraw electoral maps based on where people have moved. Under the U.S. Constitution, the 435 seats in the House and the votes in the Electoral College that select the president every 4 years are divided among the 50 states based on population, with every state receiving at least one congressional seat. The seats are reallocated every 10 years, as I said, following the decennial census count. The shift in seats reflects broader population trends that have seen the South and West grow more rapidly than the Northeast and Midwest for decades. Texas will receive two more congressional seats next year, and five states, Florida, North Carolina, Colorado, Montana, and Oregon, will gain one congressional seat each. New York, California, Illinois, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia will each lose one seat. In California, the most populous U.S. state, lost a congressional seat for the first time in its 170-year history. The reapportionment can come down to razor-thin margins. If New York had 89 more people in the census count, for instance, it would have kept its seat at the expense of Minnesota. The gains for states like Texas, North Carolina, and Florida, where Republicans control the legislatures, could be enough to erase Democrats' current narrow majority in the House. Republicans in these three states have in the past engaged in aggressive gerrymandering, the practice by which maps are deliberately redrawn to benefit one party or another. And again, I don't need to go any further. I think that's enough. Both parties do this. The Democrats do it, and the Republicans do it. But you don't ever hear about you don't hear the Republicans whining, screaming, and pointing fingers of righteous indignation at the other party when they do it, because they know that both parties do it. The Democrats, on the other hand, are screaming bloody murder. This is horrible. This disenfranchisement. It's racist. Yeah, right. Yeah, no, you do it too. You just don't call attention to it when you do it. So please keep that in mind. If you're like me, if you're getting emails every day about gerrymandering and about evil Republicans doing these things, then remember, this is a common practice by both parties. Both parties do it. Both parties are, I would say, guilty of it, but how can you be guilty of something that actually is not a crime? It's allowed. You can do this. And this argument is right now at a fever pitch, because the Democrats know that they are on the verge of losing power. They're losing power and control in the House. And that the Electoral College vote also will shift in shape as a result. And they're doing everything they can to blow as much smoke as they can to distract as many people as they can, so they don't understand. This happens every 10 years. And the Democrats are actually more manipulative than anyone else when it comes to drawing districts for political gain. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast, about halfway through this Tuesday edition. Thinking about that last story, check it out for yourself on linkreport.us. But I got to be honest with you, there are days when I look at my email, my inbox, and I think, do these liars really think people believe what they're buying, what they're selling? And then I have to remember, well, yeah, they do. People do believe. So it's really disheartening. It's really weird. Anyway, just remember that when they're playing political games, they're counting on you being ignorant. And the way to fight back is not to be ignorant. Do not be ignorant. Don't be like, I know I'm not going to go into the story, but you probably saw Bill Maher talking about the, let me just quote what he said here really quick. He said, you know, the reason why advertisers in this country love the 18 to 13, 34 demographic, because it's the most gullible. Yeah. A third of people under 35 say they're in favor of abolishing the police, not defunding, but doing away with the police altogether, which is less of a policy decision and more of a leg tattoo. 36% of millennials think it might be a good idea to try communism, but much of the world did try it. I know millennials think that doesn't count because they weren't alive when it happened, but it did happen. And there are people around who remember it. Pining for communism? It's like pining for Betamax or MySpace. So when you say, oh, you're old, you don't get it. Get what? Abolish the police and the border patrol and capitalism? Cancel Lincoln? No, I get it. The problem isn't that I don't get what you're saying or that I'm old. The problem is that your ideas are stupid. And he's right. And there is that younger part of our nation that is believing what they're told, but they've been lied to. And what do we do about it? Well, when given the opportunity, we tell them the truth. That's what we do about it. When given the opportunity, tell them the truth. And if they don't believe you, make sure you have the receipts. Show it to them. Because you have to remember that in schools today, they aren't taught the reality of American history. Students today are taught leftist opinion of American history. There's a big difference. Another thing they talk about is jobs, about working jobs and minimum wage. And you know what? Minimum wage, you know this, I know this. It's an entry-level thing. The minimum wage was not supposed to ever, never intended to support a family. It wasn't intended for paying bills. And people with reasonable intelligence understood that if you had a minimum wage job and you had some bills, you better have more than one minimum wage job because you needed a lot of hours in order to make just the minimum to be able to get by, if at all possible. So the minimum wage was for young people getting into the marketplace, get of jobs, finding out what it was like to be in the workforce, to learn lessons, and hopefully, as they worked their part-time minimum wage jobs, find a field which appealed to them that they could pursue and make a career out of. Well, Zachary Reddick is one such person. He's a Coastal South Carolina University student. He's in the news after he was awarded a $25,000 scholarship from the restaurant where he works. This after he had to quit school to care for his mother, who was battling cancer. Reddick started working at a Chick-fil-A on James Island in Charleston, South Carolina, when he was 15. He hoped to earn some extra cash to help his family. Working at the restaurant did become a source of stability for the teen and his family. In turn, Reddick, who is now 21, has shown tremendous leadership as an employee and became a team leader within a few years of joining the business. He eventually had to quit school to look after his sick mom until she passed away last April, but he aspired to advance his career and started focusing on the education last year. In March of 2021, this year, Chick-fil-A awarded him the True Inspiration Scholarship worth $25,000 for his leadership and inspirational contribution, in addition to financial need. He continued devotion to his education online, also demonstrated remarkable dedication towards his coursework. Chick-fil-A CEO and Chairman Dan Cathy broke the big news in a surprise virtual meeting last month, saying, "This scholarship is truly life-changing for my academic career," said Reddick. Coastal Carolina University reports, "With having no financial support from my parents next year," okay, this is coming from the university. He says, "With having no financial support from my parents next year, this scholarship makes schooling a possibility. Instead of worrying about how I'm going to afford my education, I can now make my dreams a reality because of this scholarship." Now, according to Chick-fil-A, the recipients can choose to use these funds at any institution for as long as it is accredited. Quote, "Being a Chick-fil-A James Island team member means so much more than just working at a restaurant," says Reddick. "To me, it means I get to make a meaningful impact on the Charleston community. Becoming a team member has given me boundless opportunities and has shaped me into the person I am today." He's going to use the cash to go after a bachelor's degree in business management. He's attending the university both virtually and in person, where he plans to pursue further studies. The money and the laptop he received with the scholarship will be a great help in his career, he says. He plans on getting a master's after completing his bachelor's. And Chick-fil-A has awarded scholarships worth $19 million this year alone. Almost 7,500 employees in the United States and Canada through their Remarkable Futures Scholarship Initiative. But only 12 students got this $25,000 True Inspiration Scholarship Award. Now, the reason this story is important is not because it's a feel-good story. Oh, that's great. That's great. The kid did the right thing. He ends up getting rewarded for it. Yeah, that's wonderful. But the lesson here is that this guy pursued this the right way. He didn't go in just to show up at the J-O-B and to work the drive-through and then be on his cell phone texting or chatting or whatever, or complaining about the work situation. He went in to learn how things work and become part of the team. And he saw the importance of how things work and became a leader. And as a result, he's been rewarded. And that is the purpose of the minimum wage. It's to give somebody access to that first rung on the ladder. And if they catch it, they catch on. They realize, oh, this is how it works. I like this. This is cool. What if I pursue this? Then things advance. And someone like this young man can also, aside from just being a team leader, can go into the management training program and learn how to become a manager and potentially someday an owner of franchises. And in that step of the game, there's quite a bit of money. It's a good foundation for building a life, a prosperous life. And again, we go back to the minimum wage. That's the purpose for the minimum wage, to give you a taste of what it's like in this particular business. If it's not your cup of tea, find the cup of tea that is your cup of tea. That's the important thing to remember. The reason for the minimum wage is for you to find your niche, to find what appeals to you. Not to go to work every day and complain about making $7 or $8 an hour and demand that you should have $15 because you can't support your family on $7 an hour. The job was never intended to be one for supporting families. If you believe that going to work at Chick-fil-A and working a part-time job, well, Chick-fil-A or anywhere, is the way to feed your family, then somebody's been lying to you. You need to realize that this is an opportunity. If you want to excel, if you want to make more money, the opportunity's there. This guy proves it. Not just because of his dedication to his family and school and for what he got rewarded by Chick-fil-A for, but because this guy sees the importance of doing the job and doing it right, showing up and doing the work every day, showing up ready to go, getting there early, figuring out what needs to be done for the day, and diving in and getting it done. Not pushing it off on other people, not doing the least amount possible, as little work as you can get away with, but being that leader, being that example, being that one. That one who shines and will advance someday. That's the kind of character that needs to be shining in all of these part-time positions. But sadly, nowadays, when you go to fast food joints, not Chick-fil-A, and you know this if you live anywhere near Chick-fil-A and you have it in your area, you've been there, you understand these guys have it down to a science. They thank you. They're happy. They're appreciative of your business. You understand that they're getting it right. But so many places aren't. You pull up to the drive-thru and you can't understand, not because the speaker is a piece of junk, but because the person on the microphone won't learn the English language. And I don't mean because they're from another country. And if you have questions about your order, you meet with attitude, not helpfulness. And you see that happening everywhere. And now, with all of the unemployment help coming from the government, those people, the ones that make the fast food experience so horrible, they're not showing up for work anyway. Something that I've seen happen in our area, you probably have too, is that some places that you would normally swing by to grab a cup of coffee in the morning, the only thing you can do is go to the drive-thru now because their dining rooms are closed. And it's not because of COVID. It's because of staffing. They can't find people willing to go to work because they're making more money from their government checks. And that's a problem too. But just remember, the minimum wage never was intended to support anyone. And those of you telling you it should be, are lying to you, and they're looking for people to blame. for their lack of willingness to advance on their own, to work hard. To work hard and do the job. And the unemployment benefits, wow. 40 Democrats sent President Joe Biden a letter asking him to include more generous and long-lasting unemployment benefits in a brand new anti-poverty bill that the administration is expected to roll out. The radicals want Biden to propose a massive overhaul of the unemployment insurance system by mandating new federal standards in programs that are now basically run by the states. So they want to take this away from the states and put it in the hands of the federal government, which has proven to us they rarely get anything right. These guys propose increasing the amount of jobless payments, extending the duration of the weekly benefit, expanding eligibility requirements, and creating a system that would more closely tie the payments to economic conditions. They wrote in a letter, to the, according to the Wall Street Journal, the CARES Act's emergency programs must be extended to support jobless workers for the duration of the current economic turndown. But we must also fix the underlying problems facing our unemployment insurance system so that it can provide economic security for all workers. The $2.2 trillion CARES Act was the first COVID-19 aid bill signed by President Trump a year ago. There's a great need for states to upgrade their unemployment benefit systems. During the last recession, hackers and thieves had a field day collecting on fraudulent claims. Trump also pointed to the need for upgrading state computer systems. Some states like California saw their unemployment claim system collapse. That Republicans have argued, according to the Wall Street Journal, that large payments distort the labor market by offering people more money than they could make it work. And some Democrats have expressed concerns about the proper size of supplemental checks. The level of the payments was a sticking point in the latest round of aid, with the $400 a week proposed by House Democrats reduced to $300 a week in the Senate. You remember that fight going on and people being mad about that. That $300 a week was in addition to state unemployment benefits, giving many workers a larger weekly paycheck than they had gotten while they were working, which is the core of the problem we're seeing in places like I was referring to just a moment ago, where people don't want to go to work anymore because they make more money just going to the mailbox. Why go to work when you can go to the mailbox and make more money? And that's a problem. What happens when it all runs out? Because there's only so much money they can take from you and me. Final segment for the Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. We were talking about the minimum wage and government making it larger. And one of the problems with giving government that kind of power and authority and control is that the more you give to the government, you cede to the government, the larger it gets and the smaller you get. And Dennis Prager writes an article about that. And you know, he does these PragerU videos, and they post the text, they post the transcript of these videos on social media when they aren't being when they aren't being screened out. And this is one of those. The bigger the government, the smaller the citizen. This is one of the most important realizations about society you will ever have. In fact, this understanding is the primary reason for America's unique success as both a free and affluent society. Everything gets smaller as the government gets bigger. Liberty gets smaller. Individuality gets smaller. Goodness gets smaller. And human character gets smaller. This is not a political point on behalf of a political party. It is simply it's an observable fact. And it's just common sense. Now, no one denies that government can and must do certain things. There's plenty for government to do. It's the government that must protect us from foreign attacks. That's why we have armed forces. It's the government that must protect us from criminals within our country. That's why we have police. Likewise, fire departments and courts are obviously necessary government institutions. And yes, when all else fails, private and religious-based charities, families, friends, then too, the government must be there to provide a safety net of last resort. But it must always be of last resort. When the government is the first resort, the first place citizens look when they have a problem, bad things happen. As government grows, almost everything else begins to disappear. The first thing that goes when government gets bigger than it needs to be is goodness. Yes, goodness. As the state gets bigger, people simply do less good for their fellow citizens. After all, why help others when the government will do it for you? This is the reason that, as noted by the International Nonprofit Organization Charities Aid Foundation, and shown in study after study, Americans give more charity and volunteer more time to help others than Europeans do. Not to mention just about everybody else in the world. From the beginning, Americans understood that government must be small, and therefore individuals must devote time and money to helping others, as well as non-governmental institutions of goodness. They have to be large and plentiful. Europeans, on the other hand, with their philosophy of big government, came to rely on the state to help their fellow citizens and even their own family members. The second thing that diminishes as the government grows is the character of many of its citizens. Just as taking care of others is a sign of moral character, so is taking care of oneself. Relying on others to take care of you, when you are capable of taking care of yourself, is just plain selfish, and the very definition of irresponsible. And it gets worse. The more people come to rely on the state to take care of them, the more they begin to develop a sense of entitlement. A sense of entitlement is the belief that you do not owe others, but that others, in this case the state and your fellow citizens whose money supports the state, owe you. A sense of entitlement creates two other bad character traits, ingratitude and resentment. The more people expect to be given, the less grateful they will be for what they are given. And they get resentful when any of those entitlements are taken away. The third thing that bigger government diminishes is liberty. This should be obvious. The more government, the more rules. The more rules, the less liberty. In much of Europe, for example, governments tell store owners how many hours they can keep their own stores open. That's right. In France and Germany, for example, you can't keep your own store open past a certain hour, and you can't open your store before a certain hour. And in the United States, the Federal Register was 2,620 pages long in 1936. By 2012, it contained 78,961 pages of rules and regulations. There are, however, some things big government always does increase. Corruption, fraud, and theft. How could it not? Unless you think people are angels, and that political power attracts angels, you know that a lot of people with almost unlimited power and with access to almost unlimited sums of money will abuse those powers. So, for all these reasons, small government was the vision of the people who founded the United States of America. It is the major reason America has given more people more freedom and more opportunity to live a better life than has any other country on earth. And that's Dennis Prager's article from yesterday, shared on social media. I think it's interesting. His take on this is just dead on. It's just dead on. If you don't follow Dennis Prager, you should. You should follow his. You should follow him on Facebook and on Twitter, because he posts some wisdom that you're not going to find pretty much anywhere else. I think it's interesting what he says. The first thing that goes when government gets bigger than it needs to be is goodness. As the state gets bigger, people simply do less good for their fellow citizens. After all, why help others when the government will do it for you? And when you look in the areas of our country which are the most dependent on government, those places that are giving, that are getting the government checks every month, where most of the population is getting those government checks, you begin to see that playing out. That there is little to no charity. There is little to no help for the neighbor who's having problems. I know that's not universal, and I know you can't apply that in every one of these neighborhoods, but you can apply it in very many of them. And another thing, things big government does increase always, corruption, fraud, and theft. How could it not? Because, well, unless you think people are angels and that political power attracts angels, you know, a lot of people with almost unlimited power and with access to almost unlimited sums of money will abuse those powers. I know that when I say that, there are certain people's faces that come to mind for you, and the same is true for me. I think of certain people in politics who have demonstrated that they are deeply corrupt. These people have demonstrated that they are deeply corrupt. They have built their, in fact, going back to charity and helping others, they have built their own charitable organizations and not helped others with the money. They've said they have, but then they haven't. They have committed fraud. That's the evil that happens when people are given too much power and control. And right now, we're watching in our nation the people who are running things politically. They represent a belief system called progressivism, which believes that people are inherently good, that they're just naturally good. I challenge you to go visit a friend, relative, neighbor, who has a 2-year-old, and then come back to me and tell me, yeah, all people are inherently good. Because when you watch a 2-year-old not get their way in what they do, they call it the terrible twos for a reason. It's because mankind isn't inherently good. It's inherently selfish. It inherently wants what it wants. It wants its way. It wants to be satisfied. It wants to be fulfilled. It wants you to do everything for it. That is the nature of mankind. But the progressives believe that everybody is inherently good, and thus it's outside influences that cause bad things to happen, and so they want to restrict those outside influences, hence gun reform. They want to eliminate guns because they believe that if you eliminate the access to guns, then you'll eliminate that kind of violence. Well, what we know from experience around the world is that when you reduce access to something, only lawful people stop accessing that thing, not the bad people. The bad people still find ways to get their hands on it. And if you totally eliminate that particular thing, whether it be guns or whatever, then they'll find something else and continue to do bad things with something else. Because people are not inherently good. And that's the problem. But those who are in control, in power, today, in the United States of America, would have you believe that people are inherently good. And those same people, and you are imagining the faces now just like I am, those same people have demonstrated to us that they will change their tune at the drop of a hat. When the breeze changes directions, they will change with it. Because they have no moral compass. There is no standard of right and wrong. So they will excuse anything and everything that they do. They will justify the evil that they do as being done for the good of everyone. And frankly, I think you and I both know wrongdoing when we see it. And we know when we're being lied to. And we know that these people are not inherently good. and that they have no moral compass, and that they will lie to us at the drop of a hat when it suits their purposes. And these people want government to be bigger. And the result is that everything about life as you know it that you hold dear gets smaller when government is bigger. And we can say that because there is a track record. We've seen it happen around the world. A mere 90 miles off of our southernmost tip, the southernmost tip of Florida, we have an entire civilization, an entire population of people of a nation who were under this kind of a government. A little further south, on the northern edge of South America, in Venezuela, we have another example. And we can look to Europe for the same examples as well. That when government gets larger, everything about humanity gets smaller, and everything becomes distorted. And that's something that we, as a free people, cannot allow to happen in the United States of America. And that is why it's extremely important that we be politically aware and that we be politically active and that we do everything we can in the coming election next year to correct the course of the nation and to prevent the socialists, the communists, from making us smaller than them. That's it for today. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you next time on the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.